This is an ABC podcast.
Hi, I'm Chris Dengate.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And on this episode of The Signal, you are going to hear the incredible and still unfolding story of the Sharouf children, the remaining members of an Australian family who survived the collapse of the Islamic State and are currently stranded in a Syrian refugee camp.
Well, I would say that we weren't the ones that chose to come here in the first place. I mean, we were brought here by our parents, and now that our parents are gone, we want to live, and if for me and my children, I want to live a normal life just like anyone would want to live a normal life.
The ABC has been following their grandmother's desperate attempts to get them out.
You know where Australians are?
Zainab Sharouf! Zainab Sharouf!
So what was it like as an Australian kid inside the Islamic State? And is it possible to get back home? That's today's episode.
So if you know anything about the Sharouf kids, there's a good chance you learnt it from the front page of an Australian newspaper.
Yeah, to say that their dad, Khalid Sharouf, was a villain to a lot of Australians doesn't really touch the sides.
No. So he was convicted of involvement in a terrorist plot here, and after he got out of jail for that, he went to fight for the Islamic State and committed God knows how many atrocities in the process. And so for obvious reasons, he's always been this really reviled figure. But then there are his kids.
Yeah, so three of his children have survived him and their Australian mother and the territorial collapse of the Islamic State where they were living. And so far, they've survived horrific conditions in a Syrian refugee camp. And then that's where their grandmother, Karen Nettleton, comes in. So she's been trying for years, actually, to get them out. And the ABC's Four Corners has been following her attempts very closely. And tonight's program tells that story.
Yeah, story/ordeal, which is still a very long way from over. So ABC reporter Dylan Welch has been over there with Karen and actually inside the refugee camp in Syria. And he's met and spoken to the Sharouf kids. So we got him on the phone to tell us what they found.
So me and my colleagues are in Erbil, Iraq, which is the kind of northwest corner of Iraq near the border with Syria. We're here because we were following Karen Nettleton, who went into Syria to find her grandchildren. Her grandchildren who were taken by their parents into Syria 5 years ago in February 2014 to join ISIS. And Karen has spent 5 years trying to get them out.
So this is actually the third time Karen's travelled to the Middle East to try to bring her grandchildren back home. The first two involved people smugglers, encrypted messages, even code names, and cost Karen tens of thousands of dollars. And Dylan has been there with her for all of them.
Me and my colleague, Suzanne Dredge, have been kind of chronicling Karen's journey for 4 years, and we've travelled with Karen while she's made three attempts to rescue her kids. The first two involves her travelling to Turkey. Both times she was essentially trying to arrange smugglers to get the kids out. And sadly, both times those attempts failed.
It won't be long now, okay?
Okay.
And then we can
I'm
look.
I'm so sick of being here.
I know. I mean, I promise you, it won't be long.
I don't know what to do with myself anymore. I'm scared it's not going to work, and then what am I supposed to do? Every single time I see someone, they ask me, why don't you want to get married? You want to get married, this and that? And they ask me about marriage, and I don't know what. And I can't just say, I don't even want to be here. I'm not free to say that here.
It's not going to be long, I promise. And we'll get you out of there.
This third time, she came to Erbil in Iraq and then crossed the border into Syria to see the kids.
And this latest mission so far has been far more successful. Karen's five-year journey has really been leading up to this moment, and she's managed to reunite with her grandchildren in this refugee camp in Syria. Now the next step is just figuring out how to get them out.
Yeah, but first, we wanted to understand the Sharouf children's story and how their mother, Tara Nettleton, went from being ostensibly a pretty ordinary teenage girl in Sydney to living under the Islamic State and raising a family there.
So she grew up like, you know, most other kids in southwestern Sydney. She went to Chester Hill High. She had a horse. She, you know, liked hanging out with her friends. It was all pretty usual. But at around 15, Karen moved to Manly and Tara decided to stay behind. She lived with some friends for a while and they kind of dropped out of contact for about a month. Karen got upset, didn't know where her daughter was. She filed a missing persons report. And the police said she was staying at the home of a guy called Khaled Sharouf. So she didn't know who this guy was. She arranged a meeting with Tara, who at that point was still 15, at Manly Wharf. So a few days later, they meet at Manly Wharf, and Tara walks up. She's wearing hijab, Muslim clothes. And she walks up to her mum, and she's with this guy who Karen knew as Khaled. She walks up and she tells her mum that she's married, she's pregnant, and she's converted to Islam. So that was the beginning of that story.
And Karen says she initially accepted the relationship despite the fact that Tara was just 15 at the time.
She loved him. And if I wanted any sort of relationship with my daughter, I had to accept it all.
So they had five kids together, Zainab and Hoda, the girls, and Abdullah, Zakawi and Hamza, the boys. But Sharouf delved further and further into Islamic extremism. And in 2005, he went to prison for 4 years after pleading guilty to terrorism charges.
Sharouf got out of jail in about 2010. And in 2011, the Syrian war kicked off. And soon after that, a new player arrived on the scene. That's ISIS. Sharouf was fascinated by them, and in December 2013, he sneaked out of Australia on his brother's passport to join them. Jump forward a few months, and Tara and Karen and Tara's kids had gone to Malaysia for a holiday. Tara told her mum that she was going to keep on going and go to Turkey. So they took off, and that was the last time Karen saw them for 5 years and 2 months, because in reality, Tara travelled to Turkey and either there or actually went to Syria, but she met up with her husband and they decided to stay in Syria with ISIS. The kids had no idea. In fact, the first thing they knew they were in Syria was when they heard people speaking Arabic and their parents suddenly told them, "You're in Syria."
And the kids were exceptionally young when they went over. Like Zainab, the eldest, was 12, and the youngest of the family was just 4 years old. And they were lobbed into this place that was about as different as you can get from Australia.
The first couple of years, they lived in Raqqa, the self-declared capital. They lived in a nice house, and they actually, Sharouf had even brought from Europe a white BMW. Huh. So I think, while they didn't want to be there and there was some pretty disturbing stuff going on, it probably wasn't quite as bad as it was to become. Unfortunately, Tara fell ill, and by late 2015, she ended up in a hospital in Mosul and died, died of intestinal problems. That then, of course, meant that the children were stuck in Syria with their father, who had no interest in getting out. And yeah, that was the beginning of their journey through hell, really.
And Dylan says that news of Tara's death just absolutely floored Karen.
And it was holes in her intestines that killed her. Something that could have been treated here at home. I still can't believe I've lost my child.
It's hard to explain, but I think they were taken into a world that was so radically different to their own. They didn't know what to think, and it was just, I guess, they did what their dad told them.
The other part of the story that people might be familiar with, if they know this story, is that Zainab went on to marry Muhammad Elamar, another kind of, infamous Australian Islamic State fighter. And she did that when she was really young. Can you tell us about what her life was like there in Islamic State?
Yeah, well, about a year after they arrived there, Sharif decided he was going to marry off his 13-year-old daughter to his best friend, Mohammed El Amar. El Amar was, Christ, I don't know, 20 years older than her. He'd watched her grow up, like he'd literally watched her as a baby and watched her grow up. But yeah, they married her off to him. And in short order, she was pregnant with his child. She gave birth to Aisha in 2016, although by that point, El Amar had actually been killed in an airstrike. And Zainab was again married to another young guy. We only know his name is Abu Bakr. And she had another kid to him and is in fact pregnant with her third child.
So their mum Tara died in 2015, and then in 2017, Khalid Sharif was killed in an airstrike, along with his two eldest sons, Abdullah and Zakawi.
But three of the Sharif kids survived all that, including the rise and fall of ISIS.
It's a wild story, and Dylan says during the Battle of Baghouz, which was Islamic State's final pocket of territory, the kids were living in trenches, hiding out under tarps, under constant bombardment, and then one of the girls, Huda, just decided to make a run for it.
She told her sister she was going to run. And she ran. And she ran out of Baghouz in the middle of a firefight. And what's most remarkable about that is that Hudeh, 8 months before that, was shot in the leg and has permanent damage to her left leg. She doesn't have any feeling below the ankle. So she can barely walk as it is.
And despite that, she still made it. And then Zainab followed shortly after in what she describes as the worst journey of her life.
Yeah, it took us 12 hours to get to the camp, and we were through the night. They didn't give us blankets in the cars or anything. It was really, really freezing. It's a cold. I thought I was going to die from the cold. I said, I'm going to die in this truck with my kids. They had not, I had nothing to cover them with. I had nothing to cover myself with.
And so that brings us to now. The remaining Sharif children inside a refugee camp in northern Syria, the camp that Dylan visited along with Karen Nettleton to find her grandchildren.
That camp sounds, I mean, if Baghouz was hell, this is just a fresh kind of hell, right? Because you were inside the camp, weren't you? You went inside.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe Al-Hol is squalid. I mean, I guess I can paint a bit of a picture for you. Mm. There was heavy rain before we arrived, and when we turned up, it was just a swamp, mud everywhere. The tents are falling down, some of them, that is. There's just, you know, human waste everywhere, litter. And then there's the people who are all suffering some variety or combination of disease or wounds or, mental trauma. I saw children without arms and legs, pregnant mothers in wheelchairs. Everyone that I saw seemed to be suffering from some level of dysentery. There's even on top of it all, the flesh disease, leishmaniasis, is prominent there. So, it's certainly not the kind of place you would want to give birth to a baby.
Zainab is pregnant, isn't she? And she's not well. What kind of condition are the Sharif kids in at the moment?
Look, they're all weak, probably the effects of a starvation diet from their last few months under ISIS. Zainab particularly, she's severely anemic. She's 7.5 months pregnant, and she's severely anemic. I think there is quite real concern that if she's not out of the camp sometime before she gives birth, there could be real problems. The death of both newborn babies and the mothers who give birth to them, there have been a number of cases in the camps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the threat to Zainab is very real.
And what are the Sharif kids saying now? I imagine they're pretty keen to come back to Australia. What did they say to you?
Yeah, well, and obviously, a big part of what the Four Corners is about is Karen getting in and seeing those kids. So why I can only recommend the Four Corners show to your listeners, you know, you're going to be on the journey with Karen, which is really intense. She combs the camp, shouting at the top of her voice, calling the names of her grandchildren. You know, what unfolds after that is just spine-tingling. You know, you'll have to watch it to see how it all plays out, but I can tell you that it's a breathtaking moment that you know, it's probably the most remarkable thing I've ever witnessed in my career, when Karen sees those kids.
And that tells you everything you need to know about how much these kids must just want to come home and have something resembling a normal life, insofar as that's possible.
Yeah, and Dylan says Karen's doing everything in her power to make that happen and to get them out, but says it's not exactly clear how she's going to do that. See, the Australian government has already said it won't be evacuating Australian children of Islamic State fighters from Syria, but Karen has been told that if she can just get them out to another country, then the government would help them from there.
There's some hope. I genuinely don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I think it would be Karen's very strong preference that those children are removed from the camps and indeed Syria prior to Zainab giving birth.
What actually would need to happen? Would they need to get the children to an Australian embassy in a nearby country, or...?
Yes, I think would be the answer to the. I mean, I would presume they would have to get to an embassy in order to then be able to fly back to Australia. The difficult part, frankly, is getting out of Syria. They are unaccompanied minors without travel documents. So, if Karen does it, when Karen does it, it's going to be no mean feat.
That is it from us today at The Signal. Thank you so much for listening. You can see that full story tonight in all its extraordinary detail on Four Corners on ABC TV and shortly afterwards on iView. Don't forget to subscribe to The Signal if you haven't already. We do make a new one of these every single day of the week. And we will catch you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.